Welcome to Game Study Hall. Hide your DS in a book and act like you're working.
It's Game Study Hall.
Tonight on the Dan and Guy Power Hour.
Forgive the sound quality. Guy's on the road. I finally figured out how to get a good recording of him and not lose any of the other stuff. So yeah, this is the first road episode.
Yeah, so I'm actually passing through Syracuse just now, and as I was telling him before we got the recording set up, there's an advertisement for a dedicated stroke center at basically St. Joseph's Hospital in Syracuse. And I found that really interesting because, you know, it's a pretty small, like, Syracuse is a really small city. It's got 1 million people. And, you know, like, it's already... Syracuse is already known as the place to go for orthopedic surgery, so you wouldn't expect it to also be known as the place for something else. Like, normally, if you're the thing for one thing, that's it. That's your thing. But I guess they've proved
it. I mean, it might have a lot to do with who is in charge, right? Like, someone who was really good at stroke medicine might have just been from Syracuse or moved to Syracuse, and thus... starting the center, and then it, you know, people want to work with that person, so they start coming.
By complete coincidence, like, I mean, so Syracuse does have a rich area. The Fayetteville area is known for its wealth. It's entirely possible, because that's where Michael Bella, the orthopedic guy, is from. It's entirely possible, yeah, that place just churns out a bunch of doctors, so there's an above-average number of doctors there. Because I also know, if you have diverticulitis, the place to go is Syracuse.
Diverticulitis,
can you get reverse polyps in your colon?
Polyps like the like Castern polyps?
Reverse polyps. So like instead of them going in, they go out, and they're little pockets that just sit there and they collect bacteria and waste until they get infected at first and infect your like cavity or torso cavity, whatever it's called.
This sounds gross and not good podcast material.
Right. Well, my grandfather had that, and they eventually had to take out a section of his large intestine. And then my father got that, and they eventually had to take out a section of his large intestine. And, you know, I got my ancestry DNA test results back, and I am basically one-to-one with my father, which defies all logic. If you think you'd only get, like, half your father's gene, but the way my mother's genes lined up, I just got all the generic stuff from her, and then I got all the specific stuff I needed from my father. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to have, like, a section of my large intestine removed someday.
I mean, the way you eat probably doesn't help.
Yeah, I mean, I eat like my father.
Poorly?
What?
Poorly?
Yeah, poorly. That's the word for it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know anyone who's really great about what they eat. Even though I'm, like, a competing athlete, I still don't eat right.
Well, yeah, I look at it like that Aristotle quote. I think it was Aristotle. Maybe it wasn't Aristotle. The one where it's, no citizen has a right to be an amateur in the means of physical fitness. What a disgrace it is for a man to grow old without ever knowing the strength and beauty of which his body is capable. Now, the way I see it, back in college, I was a Division I college athlete. I know the strength and beauty of which my body is capable. I hit max level. I got knee surgery. Like, all right, I'm done here. Like, I already know it. So now that I know it, I don't really need to maintain it. When you climb to the top of a mountain, you don't live up there. You climb to the top, you look around, you take pictures, you climb back down. Oh,
right.
Got it.
I'm still playing a lot of FTL, and it's actually starting to, like, it's getting to the point where I consistently get to a far enough sector that it's frustrating. It's becoming frustrating to play because my games are never short.
But you're not winning, you're just dying after a long time.
Yeah, and it's usually all over something, like, I'm fine when I die over something silly. Like, not a big deal. Oh, like, I happen to fight a ship that's just so powerful, I'll never get away, or, you know, I didn't notice that my oxygen wasn't set on. Like, that's just my own dumb mistake. But to have that happen, like, super late in the game is just kind of frustrating.
So that kind of reminds me of some of the, I guess, the older Fire Emblem games, right? Like, you get to the end of a chapter, and then, you know, you die to, like, enemy respawns or something, like, you just, you misclicked and moved someone the wrong way, or you just didn't count right, you did the wrong map, and you lost, like, an hour and a half. And you're like, ah. So first you have to restart the chapter, but then you have no urge to play that chapter that day. You just have to try it again the next day. And then, yeah. You know, it's the, well, I'm done here for today, and then we'll just save and quit right there.
Yeah, and losing progress is
yeah,
super frustrating.
That thing, like, I think the newer Fire Emblem, like, the 3DS ones especially, like, all the stages are, like, at most, like, 15, 20 minutes. Like, this is the option to turn off the animation. You watch all the animations, it can be like an hour, but you're playing a chapter, you don't keep the animation. And I feel like something's a little lost there, because if you get a team over, like, you lose a unit, 15 minutes in, like, okay, I'll just restart the chapter. Like, it doesn't get to you that much. I really don't like that. I like that feeling of, oh, God, you know, I'm 75 minutes into what's going to be about a 90-minute chapter. I really hope I don't get randomly crit. I really hope I don't, you know, have respawn that I didn't know about because it's the first time playing this chapter. Like, that tension is gone. You know what I mean? And obviously, you know, definitely atrocious gameplay design or game design. Like, you should never design a game where, oh, randomness can just kill you after X period of time. But at the same time, knowing that randomness can kill you kind of adds that, like, horrible, impending doom tension. It just gives you a real good feeling.
Yeah, then, like, you always have to kind of be sort of careful in the back of your mind, like, something awful could happen.
Yeah. Yeah, like, oh, this thing has, like, a 40% chance to hit me, but a 1% chance to crit me. Even with a two-roll system, that's still, like a 1 in 10,000 chance that it might just decide to kill you.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, yeah, did you know that in the Fire Emblem games, they do a two-roll system and average your rolls?
No, but that makes sense. It's in general a much better system.
Well, no, it turns it into a parabola, where basically everything above 90% is 100%, and everything below 10% is 0%. And it's designed to help the players, because in general, the player characters tend to have pretty high accuracy. So their 80% becomes like 95%, and their 90% becomes 100%. Whereas all the enemy units tend to be slow and inaccurate, so their 30% is actually 10%, and their 10% is 0%. And, you know, you can tell this if you go back and replay the old Fire Emblem, where like 85% actually means 85%, and you missed 1 out of 6 times. And the enemy with, like, you know, 40% chance to hit, he still gets a hit off, like, a third of the time. Like,
I think I misunderstood what you meant.
All right, so the two-roll system is it does two rolls and averages them.
Right.
Which, if you were to graph the result of that, it becomes a parabola, where 50% chance is still 50%, but... You know, it averages them, and then if the average is greater than the low end of what needs to be, you get a hit. So, for instance, if you have 90% chance to hit and you do two rolls, as long as, even if one of those rolls was 80, if the next roll is 100, that'll average to 90, that'll hit. Meaning, you know, when you factor in averages, you just have a higher chance to hit.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. Yeah, in that... Okay. But you still have to hit... Nah, whatever. I'm not a huge... My problem with randomness usually with, like... Especially with the kill stuff is... If you can undo it by restarting or anything like that... Then it's frustrating because I could choose to just waste time and redo it. But that's not fun, so I'm not going to, but it's going to... Like, getting punished for not grinding through content again, I feel like, is problematic.
Well, that's why, like... I mean, you can see that in, like, things where you get different stats on level up, and it's random on level up, or if it's based on a formula.
Hey, what do you mean?
Like, games where, oh, I leveled up, but I got, you know, bad stats. Better press for set and, you know, try to reroll versus...
Oh, you mean like pure randomness and level up?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right, exactly. If that's the case, then why wouldn't you just infinitely reset? So, if you can infinitely reset and get what you want, why not just give a point buy system?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why you should play games like Dokapon Kingdom, where the game is seeded on creation, and your decisions mean nothing.
Yeah, that's... Every time I meet someone who has played Dokapon, or currently plays Dokapon, it's this really, like, weird moment, where they'll, like... I was at something a few weeks ago, and someone made a joke, and I go, wait a second, I know exactly what you're referencing! What the fuck are you doing playing Dokapon Kingdom?
Because Dokapon Kingdom... Honestly, my problem with Dokapon Kingdom is the save file, like, that we first played it on. It's myself, Al, Chris, Zach. We were playing it on Chris's Wii. It was new to all of us, so we were discovering everything. Because we were all discovering everything, like, it was our first time, we were all super balanced. Like, it was self-policing. We were all discovering this in real time. Then Chris's Wii got stolen. And, like, yeah, I bought the game, and yeah, we played a new game, but once you know, once you know how to play, once you know what's going to happen, yes, there's random events, but eventually you got to the point where we knew the damage formula. Like, we reverse engineered a bunch of stuff. Like, the game isn't fun at that point. And you could never recreate that the awe and wonder and mystery of that first time. And but then because we never finished the first game, it's just like you can never have that completion, that sense of completion. But even after we did successfully beat the game, it just didn't feel complete. It's like, think about it like this. Like, you can never play Minecraft for the first time ever again. The second you play Minecraft, you know exactly what to do. Press F3, look at your coordinates, you dig down to the correct levels to get coal and iron, you use the iron tool, diamonds to get a city to get the nether to get all the stuff you need to go to the end to beat the game. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, or even like World of Warcraft. The perfect stats and formulas were reverse engineered. What did people do? They made mods that told you what the threat was. They made mods that told you what piece of gear to equip. It loses the awe and mystery. Wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's enough games that, like, that awe and mystery is awesome, but there's so many things coming out that. It's always true for something.
Oh, I know, but I'm saying if you can never have that feeling again. Just the only way you can get it is with a new game. You can never get it in the game you've already played and liked and want to feel it again, but you can't. Except, you know, when you're a 70-year-old with Alzheimer's playing on a private server in a nursing home.
But I think the fact that there are different games that you can go play and get more, like, you can get that general sense of emotion and... You're looking at it from the frame of reference where, like, I knew I liked it here, so I don't want to go hunt for the new thing, but that's exactly what you need to do to get that thing you want?
Nope, I'm just going to look forward to when I'm senile, and I can raid Ulduar for the first time every single week.
I would be really surprised if anyone... I mean, I guess you still play WoW, so... You not so much, but, like, if I went back and played any of those raids that I did a bunch, I don't think I would, any of it would feel, like, super familiar.
I mean, Ulduar especially, because, you know, I was a raid leader then, so I know all the fights, including damage, and what every single role, every single person should do in them, including 10 to 25 man, hard mode and regular mode. But I'd like to think, okay, I'll forget it.
I mean, I'm pretty sure I've forgotten it. Like, there's so much information that I remember throughout the course of WoW that even though I might technically remember all the pieces, I'll never remember, like, individually which one it belongs to. Like, I can remember Baron getting bombs, something about hiding behind pillars in Maiden, and that's about it.
Yeah, and then, you know, you hear one voice clip, and the way human memories work, where hearing sounds can trigger a huge flashback to when you have Alzheimer's.
I never played WoW with sound.
Oh, well, then you're in luck. Because there have been, like, studies where it's, you know, someone has Alzheimer's, they don't even remember their wife, and then, you know, they play the song that it was, like, popular back in the 40s when they got married, and then he suddenly remembers vividly his wedding day. He's like, yeah, this is playing on my wedding day. I remember my wife, so she was over here, and my uncle was here, and this is here, this. Then the song ended, and then, like, bam, boom, it's just...
Well, it's because we're not 100% sure how memory works, and that's...
No, we're not.
Certain things are probably stored in different places, and, like, we know our brain makes connections. So, you know, the possibility of Alzheimer's doing damage to more recently used connections and not older ones, it would make sense that you could remember, you could still have a trigger from, you know, like
yeah,
a song
exactly.
from 30 years ago.
The standard pathway to what's my wife's name is long since eroded, but... That trigger of, yeah, that song I really like, which was tied to my wedding, which is then indirectly tied to my wife's name through the back way. That'd be really disappointing if I could never raise World War for the first time ever again.
It wasn't... I mean, in terms of WoW, it was good, but it's not...
That was the high point of WoW rating.
Yeah.
It was the last raid made by the original people. They put everything into it. Every single mechanic was, like, by that point, it was perfected, distilled. Everything about that raid was perfect.
Yeah, I don't know. I think in the generals, in terms of WoW, yes, it's true, but I think WoW raiding in general is not very good anymore.
I mean, I don't raid anymore because I have, like, babies, so I can't commit to... Yeah, I can't get up from my computer, but it's my understanding that the rating is actually just as good as it's ever been, if not better, at least from what I've heard from the people still playing and what from my being on, like, anecdotal evidence. Because, like, you know, you look at, like, the descriptions and mechanics or raids these days, and even, like, the intro boss, it looks like something that would have been, like, an end game boss back 2 expansions ago. Like, look, if you get the chance, go look at, like, the mechanics for some of the bosses in Emerald Dream, or Emerald Nightmare in Legion. It's more complex than the Kel'Thuzad fight in original Naxxramas. Like, introductory bosses.
I don't even remember what Kel'Thuzad was like.
So Kel'Thuzad did, like, a void zone that you don't stand in. He would chain cast Frostbolt, and he would occasionally mind control some people. And then at, like, 40%, he would summon some ads. If you shackle too many, you freeze their shackle. Oh, in the first 5 minutes, you just have to kill some ads. Like, that's it. That's the entire fight. Yeah, it was tombs to the point where if his Frostbolt hit, they would do 98% of a, you know, max geared tank health. So you basically couldn't let a single one through. And, like, yeah, everything was, like, tuned to a point. Every void zone kill. One melee swing from one of those big Nerubian ads would kill. Like, yeah, it was hard mechanically, but it was hard because everything was one shot, and you had to have 100% perfect gear in order to do the fight, which meant you had to get lucky with RNG, and you had to funnel all your gear to your tank, you had to make sure your tank didn't get poached by another kill. It was hard for reasons that weren't gameplay reasons.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like, one-shot mechanics are hard, but they're not fun hard, they're not difficult hard, they're just, oh great, we missed the one-shot mechanic. Can you flip 100 coins in a row, you know, always get ahead?
Yeah, well, that goes back to randomness, right? You can reset a raid boss, so you will reset a raid boss. And then it becomes a grind. Like, if you know all the mechanics, and it just becomes, can we coordinate 25 people through the internet to hit a button at the right time?
Yeah. No, you can't. That's crazy hard to do. Oh, my God.
I mean, it's hard to start the podcast sometimes, because we have to coordinate on the same time, and there's only 2 of us.
Yeah, exactly. Now imagine having to coordinate 25 people. Don't forget to press the don't wipe the raid button.
Yeah, or don't stand in the wipe the raid zone or any of those other things.
Yeah, don't stand in the wipe the raid zone.
I don't know. That's why, I mean, I know I've definitely, like, talked about this before, but I feel like MOBAs are the best replacement for, like, raiding. at least for me, it feels like, I feel like it scratches all of my itches. Like, I can heal, I can tank, and
well,
do it all in a MOBA with less people.
Yeah, you get all of the, like, coordination fun that you like. Yes, you would get from raiding, but you get it from a smaller group.
In a shorter amount of time, with yeah, no, and I don't have to, I don't have to invest in getting my character to match level, I just have to, like, if I want to be competitive, I have to invest in knowledge of the game, and, you know, if I like the game, then that's easy, because you played enough, it, you'll just, you know, absorb that information.
Well, I think you can also, I'm guessing if you were to, like, chart the, like, the rise of, you know, League of Legends Dota 2 versus the WoW subscriber count, I'd wager both those games spiked around the time WoW started to go down, and I don't think it's coincidence. Like, it's not like those people playing online games just decided, okay, I guess I'm just done with online games. They're going to play something online.
Right, and they would play something that's similar to the thing
yeah.
they're currently enjoying.
I'm actually probably going to have to stop for gas soon. It only takes like 2 minutes for refuel, so probably should be just need to set down the phone and just edit out the,
I mean, you can't just hold the phone. It's a phone. Just hold it.
I'm also the one pumping the gas.
You have two hands.
What am I using to, like, press the button? Pumping gas is a two-handed job.
No, it's not. You take the nozzle out, you put it in, you punch all the stuff, and then you pump. You finish, you put it back, and...
And how much does it pull my wallet out with one hand?
How do you function in this world?
I have two hands. How do you function with just one hand?
About the same, but with twice the efficiency because I can use two hands?
Yeah, I also use two hands. It's not like I'm not banging rocks together over here. I'm going to be pumping gas. It's a two-handed job.
Sure. Okay, well, I just...
So your wallet's in your pocket. You reach into it with your right hand.
Okay. Well, let's. I'm not going to include this. So this is actually just going to like corrupt the audio.
Don't edit this out. I want
I'm
the viewers to listen and laugh at you when they're like, "Ha ha! He has to use two hands. Oh, I know one hand. Oh, I know. I messed up the joke. The point is,
I'm right and you're wrong.
No, the point is, I think I got off onto another highway and took an off ramp. Gas. Oh, God bless. It's my own fault. Like, I messed up the system. Right? Normally, I only stop at Sheets in Pennsylvania, but I departed with a half tank of gas. So it's like, you know, that's not enough to make it to Sheets. So I figure, okay, fine, I'll just stop in, you know, Tully. And then I drove past. I'm in Homer. Homer is a town south of Tully, north of Binghamton. Gas. It's always interesting stopping at these like super small towns just to refuel. You get the feeling that like you know, time has stopped. Like they feel like these towns haven't changed how they look in years.
Yeah, it's like when you're driving through a town and you're just like, this could be Buffalo or any other like suburb, and it all looks the same.
Yeah, like this town could be Auburn 20 years ago when I was a kid going to visit my grandmother. Like, has. Yeah. All right. What?
As someone who grew up in the very near where all those like baby boomer towns were from World War II, I'm just fairly used to everything looking exactly the same.
Okay. So, let me tell you about these hick towns and how their quaintness quickly, makes you remember how much you hate small hick towns. So I go to purchase gasoline, and I try to run my credit card. It's like, does not accept credit cards. I'm like, oh, that's really weird. You know, normally everything accepts a credit card. Sometimes they don't accept debit cards. So I run the debit card. Debit card at least gets through the PIN number entry. And it also denies a debit card. Please see cashier. I'm like, all right, let's do this the hard way. So I go inside. Right off the bat, there's no bathroom for just invisible. So it's like, great. It's going to be one of those ones where I'd have to ask to use the bathroom, too. fine, whatever. So I go and get a diet DP, go up to the counter, the guy's on the phone, presumably with like a manager or someone, and he goes, yeah, they've been down for a half an hour, I've just had to turn away customers. And so he gets off the phone, I'm like, how do I get back on grading one like this? So I'm like, credit cards are down? He goes, yep. So I open my wallet, and I'm like, all right, $7 in cash. I'll take $7 worth of gasoline. I do not need a Dr. Pepper more than I need gas. So I put $7 or 2.8 gallons into my tank, which actually got me another 80 miles. Oh, my God. My car is really full efficient. Looks like I will make it to Pennsylvania, where I will then refuel. Unfortunately, I did not, empty my bladder. But I think I can hold it for that, too.
What have you been playing lately?
There's the Game Study Hall Banning Guy Power Hour review of the Sunoco in Homer, New York, just off of Route 81. Overall, I'd give it like a 7 out of 10. Had a very good selection of snacks. Had the credit card, had they been able to accept cards, I'm sure I would have gotten everything I needed from this Sunoco.
I guess I'll keep that in mind if I'm ever driving through the middle of New York for no reason.
Yeah.
What have you been playing lately?
Oh, right. So tonight, on the Dan and Guy Power Hour, we discuss Terraforming Mars, the board game. Yeah, because
Never played this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just going to say, the new Fire Emblem game actually came out earlier than I thought. I thought it was coming out like the 25th or 26th. That it was like the 15th, got shipped to me. I haven't even finished all the the third chapter, the DLC, and Fire Emblem Fates Revelation. So I'm gonna try to power that down over the next week or so that we can discuss Fire Emblem Fate or Fire Emblem Echoes: Shadows of Valentia, which is a remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden, the second Fire Emblem.
Right.
But yes, Terraforming Mars. It is a board game. Good fun.
Is that all?
You haven't played it?
No. I've only even heard of it from you.
Alright, so in Terraforming Mars, you play as a corporation. It takes place in the future, right? And you are a corporation trying to terraform Mars. Because it takes place in a dystopian future where corporations are more powerful than the government. Somewhat like the year 2008.
Right.
Either way. It was a Harvey Birdman joke. The Jetsons went back in time, and we're from the far off year of 2008. And Harvey looks down at his calendar and says 2011.
Okay.
Yeah. The joke here is that corporations are already arguably more powerful than governments because they have so much money they can sway people. Not to mention the fact there are some corporations more money than the GDP of small third world countries.
Okay, so Terraforming Mars, board game.
Right. So you play as a corporation, you're trying to terraform Mars. The basic premise is, each turn, you have your income, and then you purchase action cards. There's a couple ways you can play the game. The basic way is just your dealt cards, you pick the ones you want to purchase. There's also a draft rule where you pick one card, put it down, draft around the table until you have a stack in front of you, and then you buy from that stack. So you can get more information, give me this card, that means he's not doing this strat, or, I notice I'm never getting any of these cards. I'm guessing he's probably doing this strat, that sort of thing. Or, I gave him this card, he made it all the way around the table, I guess that means no one's doing this. But at the same time, it kind of requires more knowledge of the game. We're not quite at the point where we've played the game so much that we know exactly what every single strat is, every single card would do. What cards you would use for every strat.
But this is primarily a card game? Like, I'm looking at a Board Game Geek.
It's not primarily a card game. Like, there's a board. It's more like the cards are how you do your actions. So on your turn, right, you basically do actions. And the majority of actions involve, like, playing a card to do the action on that card. But there also are some base actions you can do that don't involve playing a card. But usually you're doing a card-based action because they're more efficient than the base actions. Then, you know, it keeps going around the table until everyone is all out of actions. And then end of the turn, you produce. And you produce a variety of resources. You know, there's steel and titanium, which are really just a kind of, like, dedicated itchy and scratchy money for certain projects. Like, steel is really good for building projects. Titanium's really good for space projects. But you can just use the base money anyways. So unless you were going, like, big building or going big space, you know, titanium isn't really like, oh, I got to get some titanium. It's just like, yeah, if I get titanium, I get it. Now, if you're going big space, what?
Well, hold on, wait. Itchy and scratchy?
Yeah, itchy and scratchy money? You don't remember that episode of The Simpsons?
I mean, I'm not sure what you're trying to...
So, there's an episode of The Simpsons where they go to Itchy and Scratchy Land, which is like a parish Disneyland. And at the front desk, they're like, would you like to exchange your money for itchy and scratchy money? And Homer goes, why would I do this? He goes, well, itchy and scratchy money, it's just like regular money, except it's accepted, you know, it's dedicated money for the park. And he goes, okay, fine, I'll take, you know, like $1,000 of itchy and scratchy money. And the second they step into the park, all the different, like, you know, souvenir shops and restaurants all have signs that say, we do not accept itchy and scratchy money. The joke is that itchy and scratchy money is... it's like real money, except only accepted in certain places, like a gift
card. So it's like real money?
No, it's like a gift card, where it's just as good as real money, but only for one thing, instead of real money, which is just as good everywhere. Like, there's no business that's going to turn down $100 in cash. There are some businesses that'll turn down, like, a Cheesecake Factory gift card. Namely, every business that isn't the Cheesecake Factory.
You know, I do not have the energy to go into an economics lesson about how money works.
So what are you saying? You're saying if I go to the Olive Garden and I try to pay with a Cheesecake Factory gift card, do you think they'll accept that?
No, I'm saying that money only works because people choose to accept it.
Yes, I know. And, you know, right now, I think by definition, money is always accepted. It's currency. I think that it's always accepted. But,
right, yes.
Yes. If I take some, you know, United States Federal Reserve notes currency, the vast majority of businesses in the U.S., and even some businesses outside of the U.S., will accept that as a reasonable form of payment. Whereas,
I'm pretty sure in the U.S. you have to take it.
For certain things. Like, I'm sure you could mark, I'm sure there's some way you could position yourself, yeah, we're a card-only business or something. Like, there's always goofy, weird things that, you know, don't apply if you're a business with less than X number of employees. Like, if you're one guy that works for himself, you can skirt so many rules of the business. But, yeah, in general, cash is accepted almost everywhere. Cheesecake Factory gift cards are only really accepted at the Cheesecake Factory. Right?
Right. Besides the point. Anyway, Terraforming Mars, card-drafting game.
That's what I'm saying, right? Itchy and scratchy money, it's money that's only accepted in some places. Steel is really only accepted when you're building buildings. Titanium is really only accepted when you're building space things. But regular money, you know, it's called mega credits, but yeah, mega money is accepted for everything. So if you could give me one thing of steel or two things of money, I'll just take the two things of money, because one thing of steel is worth two things of money when I'm building, but it's worth zero everything else. Whereas that two things of money is worth two things of money everywhere. But if you could give me one money or one steel, then I need to weigh it in and say, oh, geez, you know, the one money is worth everything. I'm going to be doing a lot of building, so that two steel might actually, too many steel might be worth it.
It sounds like a problem in the design. Why would you ever go for anything, like... is it easier to get?
Yep. Well, that's just it, right? So there are some... the basic premise of the game is the first, like, half the game, you build up your economic engine. And you build up and, you know, increases your production. Increases your energy production, increases your heat production, increases your plant production, increases your steel production, increases your titanium production, increases your money production. You build up your production, And then, like, the second half of the game is when you use your production to just do stuff that gets you big victory points. You know, got to get victory points to win. And it just is really elegant, like, the way... Because everyone gets their own little mini board that they have little trackers. And all of the resources are represented by the same cube. It's kind of cool. There's the big gold cube, which means 10 of something. The mini one, which is silver, 5. And then the little mini one, copper, is 1. So if you have like a 5 and a 1 on something, on like a titanium square on your board, it means you have 6 or 11 titanium. You know, if you've got a silver and a copper on each, it means you've got 6 each. And, you know, so it solves the problem of, like, you know, Lords of Waterdeep, where you've got, like, 5 different, well, 4 cubes plus money plus corruption. Like, you got a bunch of different little symbols. It's the exact same thing for everything, you know, it's just on your board. Which, I guess you can make the argument that, oh, well, then you got to make sure you can place it on your board perfectly, and... I like it.
So if you could compare it to, if you were like going to teach it to someone, what game would you say it's most like?
Did you play Euphoria?
Yeah, I played with you at PAX.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that where, you know, everyone's kind of working towards the same goal of developing the board, but you're simultaneously also trying to go for victory points yourself. So there's 3 main trackers, right? And the game ends once all of them are maxed out. There's the 9 oceans, there's 14% oxygen, and there's 8 degrees Celsius. The planet starts at 0% oxygen, 0 oceans, and like negative 32 Celsius. But then it goes up 2 degrees Celsius each time. So when you put like 8 heat energy into, you can like one action is just spend heat energy to heat up the planet. And so you can just spend that heat, and it's the planet one step. One step is to just grow greenery, like grow a forest on Mars, and that increases the oxygen level one step. And there's like a couple ways you can do all of this. Like, increasing the heat can be done by either just spending money or by spending heat. So you can spend 8 heat cubes or like 14 money cubes. Because in the end of the day, money does everything. But heat is more efficient. So let's say you can have something like you have heat production as one of the things you're building up in your engine. You could build big heat, and then you could get your victory points by just like every turn, you're just churning out a heat up the planet, churn out a heat up the planet. Another cool thing is there's an energy, like electricity is a resource, which is usually the electricity itself isn't directly used, but the electricity production is used. Like in order to put a city down on the planet, you need to have at least X electricity production, and the act of building the city reduces your electricity production. You know, meaning the electricity you're producing is not being consumed by the city. But, yeah. And then, like, yeah, there's obviously the board itself as little hexes where you can put down your forest, put down your ocean, put down your city. So then you get victory points based on, like, whether or not you put stuff down, how it's arranged, kind of thing. What's cool is at the end of each turn, any leftover electricity becomes heat, which is kind of thematically, I like that. It's like, oh yeah, because, you know, there's nothing to do with electricity. All right, fine, well, let's go, you know, turn on heaters when I got something.
So what's the end game? Like, what triggers end game?
End game is once the oxygen meter, heat meter, and ocean are all completely maxed. But the thing is, it's kind of like an exponential thing. Like, there are some actions and cards that require certain other settings. Like, you know, if you have X number of oceans and Y amount of heat, suddenly you can play the, like, large fish card, and this puts large fish into the ocean, that sort of thing. Like, stuff like that. Like, once there's a certain amount of oxygen, and there's, oh, that's, once there's a certain amount of heat, yeah, you can't just grow like moss, you can start growing trees. The trees produce a lot more oxygen. You know, once the heat hits a certain point, it's a lot easier to put oceans out because, oh, geez, you know, water doesn't just freeze all the time. So you know, again, like the first half of the game is you build up your engine, like the first 5 or 6 turns, and then the next like 4 to 6 turns are just like bam, 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 bam. Speeder shoots up, oxygen meter shoots up, all the oceans come out.
And so, how do you feel? I mean, so what you're describing sounds pretty thematic. Do you feel like the theme contributes to the general, like, mechanic you're saying is just, like, card drafting, right? And, like...
Well, it's not so much just card drafting, because the drafting is actually just one set of rules. Like, the base rules are just, at the start of your turn, you draw 4 cards. You pick the ones you want to buy and buy them, to put the rest in the discard. Like, I mean, I guess you could say that's a draft in the sense that it's just, like, I'm picking whether or not I want these cards. But, you know, at least theme-wise, I feel like your corporation actually dictates a lot of your team, because each corporation has kind of its own power, and I feel like playing into your corporation's power is how you win big.
And what are some of the powers?
So, like, there's one, the Heat Corporation. They can choose to spend heat energy as money, like, and they already start with some heat production. So what you do is you get your heat production up really big, because in general, like, it's easier to get production cards than it is to get money production cards. Also, at the end of each turn, all excess electricity becomes heat, meaning electricity production is indirect money production for you. So if you're that corporation, heat production is money, money production is money, and electricity is indirect money. So if you get those things big, you get big money, and then you just, you know, run the end of the game. There's another corporation which gets money production and money every time a city is placed. So you go big city, but then you also kind of mooch off of other people going big city. There's one corporation where they can produce forests for a cheaper amount of plants. So you can go big plants and just cut out more plants than, you know, everyone else. There's also like end game bonuses. So like, think like, did you play Archipelago? Okay. Let's think like, obviously you played Settlers of Catan, right? You know how there's like longest road and largest army? Yeah, there's stuff like that, but it's for like, not longest road and largest army, but there's for like, you know, most money production, most heat cubes, most metal cubes. You know, stuff like that. Except it's not fixed which ones there are. And there's 3 endgame ones, but you have to purchase which ones they are. So you can invest 8, then 14, then 20 money to pick what endgame bonuses there are. So like, if you have a lot of heat production, you're probably going to fund Thermalist because it's the cheap one. Because you know, geez, endgame, this will be big for me.
Oh, wait, everyone buys into what they want the endgame conditions to be?
Well, and that's just it. There's 5 total, but there's only 3 of them to be purchased. So it's kind of a race to purchase which ones. But then at the same time, once they're purchased, you might change your strategy. Say, geez, I was going big money, but banker isn't going to be an endgame bonus. I should do a pivot to big heat. And it's not production, too. It's just raw cubes, which kind of gives you some leeway, because there's 2 ways you can get cubes. Like, you can just, there are cards that just give you, like, titanium, and then there's cards which increase your titanium production. At the end of each turn, based on your production, you earn cubes of that type. But, like, yeah, you might have low production, but, like, the game we played, actually, all had 0 production heat, 0 production titanium, 0 production for steel. He won Thermalist, and he won the Miner Award, because once he saw those awards go out, he just stopped spending his cubes, and he just stored them for the rest of the game. Meanwhile, the people that actually were producing and spending, because that was part of their engine for actually earning points. Whereas Paul wasn't producing because they weren't even part of the engine. So it was just like any passive cubes he got, he just held on to. And then he had more cubes at endgame. So, like, it can kind of give you direction in that sense. Like, oh, I wasn't going to do that, and now I'm still not going to do that, but it's just going to let them pile up. So, but again, too, they get more expensive after they've been bought. So if you think you're going to go like the banker strat, if you're a corporation that's going to have big money, yeah, you should probably fund Vanker as soon as possible, because it's pretty cheap, 8. But the second one that's funded is 14, and the third one that's funded is 20. You know, so it gets a lot more expensive if you wait. But at the same time, you might actually be able to look at the boards and say, yeah, you know what, it's 20, but no one can stop me, and yeah, I'm just going to pay the 20, and I'm basically paying 20 for 5 victory points at endgame.
And yeah, it sounds like it's pretty easy to get blocked out of, like, being able to win.
Yeah-ish. I mean, if you get blocked out of purchasing your endgame bonus, it's probably because you mismanaged your resources and did not properly buy the bonus when you had the chance. Like, it's not like the kind of thing where, oh, geez, he bought it the exact turn before I was going to buy it. It's, yeah, you bought that, and I should have bought mine last turn, but instead I was too busy. You know, I put a potion down, and he got me 1 victory point when I should have invested those resources in the endgame bonus that would have gotten me 5 victory points. Like, if you don't get your bonus, you misplay. Then again, as we get better at the game, maybe it will come down to, yeah, turn 3 is a turn when everyone buys their bonuses, because this game is solved, and we know the exact optimal placement, and this strat is guaranteed to have the extra 2 money you need to be able to buy it 1 turn sooner, so this strat is a broken strat, the game is solved, no one has to play again, but we're not at that point yet. We're still at the point where the game is fun, it's not worked yet.
I mean, what's a game you feel like solved that you don't play anymore?
Power Grid.
Yeah, and Power Grid's been solved for, like, the solution to that's also pretty simple.
Yeah, count cards, no one pays 3 to come out. Know which are the efficient power plants.
Yeah.
Like, knowing when to fall back for a turn so that you'll be the first to pick once the higher efficiency ones come out. Like, it's a slow game. It's unfortunate. And, like, yeah, you can say, oh, just go play the expansion. And, yeah, the expansions are fun, like, once. Like, okay, wow, it's Brazil. Wait, no, was Brazil one of them? Yeah, Brazil was one of them.
Yeah, wow. I mean, there's a ton of different ones.
yeah, I own all of them.
I own a ridiculous number of them, not by intention.
I do, because we saw Space Power Grid, and I'm like, I still want to get my Power Grid out. I guess I need to buy these expansions. Oh, God, these are only fun once. I guess I need to buy more expansions. There's a game that you solve and then you don't play again. At the same time, there's Puerto Rico, a game that completely solved and yet it's still fun to play every single time, which I feel like is because it's just so balanced. Like, it's borderline chess tier, where it's super balanced, it's super solved, but it's fun every time.
Yeah, I think the thing with Puerto Rico and comparing it to, like, chess or even Rock, Paper, Scissors, where there is a solution, but there's multiple of them, and they play off of each other.
Yeah. And, like, yeah, there is technically some randomness in Puerto Rico with the order the crops come out. But other than that, and I guess you're positioning around the table, so you're seating around
the table. Yeah, but you see the crops that are available for, like, the next cycle. So you can still, well, even though it's random what those will be, you can still plan around it.
Really, I don't want to say it comes down to the first turn, but it comes down to whatever crops are available on the first turn and how you are seated around the table first turn, because that can be huge. If I say, oh, there's exactly one coffee, and there's exactly one tobacco, and there's no other cash crops, not even sugar, it's like coffee, tobacco, 3 indigos, coffee, tobacco, 3 indigos, and like a corn, no, because corn, but you see what I mean? Like, oh, geez, if I'm the first one to pick, if I'm not the first or second to pick Settler, I'm not getting cash crop. Those two people are going to have advantage. Especially, too, if the next set of crops that come out are, like, 4 indigo and 2 corn, something. If not, you don't even get sugar. Like, then it's ogre. It's ogre, you're Shrek'd. The two people that got cash crops are basically, one's going to go factory, the other one's going to go harbor, and the game goes to them.
I mean, you can still work with it, though. It's not, I mean, you're not out of it.
Assuming everyone is, like, skill capped or nearly skill capped players that have completely solved the game. Yes, you can still work with it, but you're going to be so behind that it would be very, very hard to catch up. And yeah, end game will probably be you lost by like 3 points, and they'll say, yeah, you know what it came down to? You lost a turn and a half because the bad settler draws. And so yeah, I knew exactly what happened. Not like you won't have fun, but it's like, yeah, well, it's over.
Yeah, that is something I find really interesting. Where, like, I really like playing new games where everyone at the table has no idea. Like, we all understand the rules. Like, don't explain to us accurately. There's no misunderstanding. But we're all playing the game with complete, like, fresh eyes.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoy that. And there's so many board games that I can always do that.
You know, yeah, like, you don't know the perfect strat yet. And then the first time you beat the game, you say, oh, geez, I want to replay this game. Because now that I've seen the full game through, I want to try something different. I want to try this. I think I can do this. But then, like, there's very few games that you actually sit down and just play to the point of, like, super, super solvent. In fact, really, in terms of, like, think of Puerto Rico, Power Grid, Carcassonne, I guess Russian Railroad now. Because funny, with Russian Railroad, even though I own the game, and I own the expansion, and I own the expansion, I barely play the physical copy anymore. I play the, they have it online on the Yukata website.
The what? I've never heard of this.
It's a website where you can play board games online.
Oh, let me pull this up right now. Spell it for me.
Yukata. Yucata dot C.
Wait.
It's a German site, it has English.
Now, speaking of German, I went to a game jam this weekend at the, there's like a German cultural institution in Boston that held a game jam. That was really interesting. I made a game, it was a focus on politics.
German politics or American politics?
Just the idea of politics in general.
So like making a politicking game?
No, just the idea of like governments and things like that. And like they wanted like a merger of art and gaming, which I think is a crazy thing to say because games are art. But my team made a game about like trying to live your life with depression. So that was
like,
really interesting.
I don't know, at least from my American perspective of German politics versus my American perspective of American politics, American politics is a lot more like professional sports. Like, you pick your team, and you just stick behind it, and there's a lot of give and take, and it's, oh, geez, what's going to happen next? Oh, man, the other team has the ball, but we'll get it back. Whereas, at least my understanding of German politics is, because the parliamentary system, there's a whole bunch of different factions. They're all kind of vying for power, but no one can really control it all, except for that conservative faction that Merkel controls, because they're like the plurality. So it's really just Merkel and whoever sucks up to Merkel gets whatever they want. I'm sure a German person could describe it to be better, but it just seems really poor.
It wasn't about specific politics. It was about like the concept of politics.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I feel like if you were making an American
not like who's currently president, just the idea that politics exists,
and
that governments exist.
Yeah, I'm saying do this. Pick a game that you think most mirrors American politicking. I would say American football.
It's not related. That's what I'm saying. It's not about a specific political system. It's about the idea that political systems exist.
Okay, well, that's kind of abstract. I'm thinking in terms of political systems, if you said, pick the game that you think looks like American politics, I would say American football. Two factions, they're going at each other, and they're just going pushing back and forth. Very rarely does one faction actually win.
Well, I can tell you one faction always loses. It's called the people.
Oh, yes, obviously. In both cases, too. The people pay to watch a game, and then they really just wasted their time and money.
No, because when you watch a football game, you can at least enjoy it, and you could also bet on it. And
you can bet on American politics, too.
Yeah. Well, as someone who doesn't watch football but plays fantasy football, I can tell you that football can provide a lot of enjoyment.
So you're telling me you didn't bet on Trump and win big?
No, I don't.
Oh.
I
won $40.
Someone who doesn't. I'm not even going to go into that. But
it was. I mean, come on. It was obvious he was going to win. I'm like, oh, cool. I can pay nothing and get money. And then I paid nothing and got money.
Wait, someone accepted a bet that was like, I bet you $40 is going to happen, but not the, like, counter bet.
No. It's so much. Well, one, we actually did do a round robin set of bets over free lunches. Like, Paul bought me a lunch. I was going to buy him a lunch if Hillary won. He was going to buy me a lunch if Trump won. We had that sort of set up, too. But I was talking about the website Predict It. It's basically, it gets around gambling on politics laws because there's no house. It's you. Whenever you buy a share, someone else has to buy the other half of the share. So the Trump is going to win share at 30 cents means there is a 70 cent share Trump is going to lose. So someone else chooses to buy this, and then whoever wins gets the other half of the share. So I bought a bunch of Trump is going to win at like 25 and 30 cents, and a bunch of people bought Trump is going to lose, thinking, geez, I spend 70 cents. But I'm going to get paid a dollar because it's a sure thing. There's no way this idiot will win. And then when he lost, all of their 70 cents and 75 cents went to me.
You know, it's kind of funny that's just really bad, like, betting from those people. Like, if they didn't want him to win, you should place your money that he does. In which case, if he doesn't win, then you get what you want. He didn't win. If he does win, you still get a bunch of money.
Yeah, I was almost thinking about that. Because, you know, I was like, oh, geez, I should bet on Hillary. So, at least if she wins, I get some money to make myself feel better. But then it's like, no way. There's no way she's actually going to win. Like, I mean, around August 2015, when I made the bet, it was like, wow, this guy isn't a clown. He's pretending to be a clown to trick everyone. Incredible. Like, there's no way. Like, no one gets lucky this much. He clearly knows what he's doing. Really won.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, I'm not even going to, no, I'm not voicing a political opinion because fuck politics.
All right.
Anyway, what's the point I was trying to make? Oh, I was looking at this website and I got distracted. My team made a game about trying to live with depression. And essentially, there's an invisible timer running that, the longer it goes, the more, like, washed out the world becomes, and, like, everything kind of becomes gray, and you start to, like, dissociate from the world. And you can do things to try to, like, refocus, but they're all, like, temporary stopgaps. So you'd, like, get back in bed and kind of stave off the, like, the problems, but you still have to get out and, like, do your tasks and goals. It was really interesting. I really enjoyed the art. I did the coding, but it was very straightforward to, like, the coding wasn't. I like to try something, like, weird and hard at game jams, and this was just kind of straightforward.
Like, how do you win?
You don't, because you can't, like, you don't win against depression. You just. So you had to, like, do your morning routine and leave the house. But if you do that, then the next day just starts. Because when you have a mental illness, you know, and, like, a problem like this, it doesn't go away just overnight.
Yeah, it sounds like one of those walking simulator, not games.
It was a game jam game that I made in 48 hours at a game jam about politics. So
I'm just saying, if you were to put it on Steam Greenlight, I'd play it, but I'd also tag it with walking simulator and not a game.
No, it's more like a puzzle hunt and less like a walking simulator.
Okay, so it's a stationary simulator.
I
think at this point the term walking simulator has kind of expanded beyond its definition of walking simulators to be more a generic term for games that are not really games, that are more just like proof of concepts for some abstract concept that's like a puzzle maybe, or like you're trying to tell a story and you weren't quite sure what medium to do it, maybe it's a game. But, you know what I mean?
I'm not. So, I feel like walking simulators should be spoken about less like video games, because I think it does them a disservice for the general idea that they're trying to convey. Like, the idea of a narrative that you're sort of participating in, but you're really, it's mostly passive. Like, you're not solving puzzles. You're just, you know, your activity is just be in the world. And while you use, like, a controller or a cube and a mouse to move through it, and it bears a lot of similarities to a video game, I think it, calling it that is kind of...
I think
your audience would be bigger and be more susceptible to interesting ideas if it was a little more, straightforward.
Well, excuse me. I mean, honestly, just a second, I gotta get some water. Just give me more cold. Oh, God bless it!
Yeah, it's interesting, because, like, I don't particularly... I haven't really played, like, a walking simulator that I enjoy, because I'm very much a, like, twitchy-type player. I keep coming up with ideas that I like, that essentially are walking simulators. Like, I want to make a game where you're a Roman emperor watching a gladiatorial battle, and all you do is just look around, and based on where you look, stuff changes. So, like, if you stop looking at the fighters, they'll get nervous that you're not enjoying the fight, so they'll start to become, like, showier and more flashy. And, like, if you keep looking at the same person, like, if you keep looking at your one guard, he'll start to get nervous that, like, you know, why is he keep looking at me? And he'll start acting weird.
So, like, what's the point of the game?
It's just to see how you can affect the world and, like, how the story goes.
Yeah, actually, there is a market for that. So,
right, well, I'm just saying, it's like, it's not a game in the sense of, like...
Well, no, that's just it. Remember, Germany has a bunch of, IP laws. Like, you can't have, like, really violent stuff there. So, like, they're really big on simulator games. Like, you've seen, like farming tractor simulator, train simulator, construction simulator. Like, you've seen all those, right?
Yeah, I mean, I own a bunch of them. They all seem really interesting.
Yeah.
I just never have time.
Yeah. Like, the depth at which they simulate this stuff is amazing. It's like, wow, I feel like after playing this, you could actually say, yeah, I know how to drive a tractor. I would not be surprised if you could do that and then get into a tractor and at least know how to basically turn it on and use it. I mean, technically, I think, like, at least some of the 9/11 terrorists, they trained in flight simulator. So, clearly, you know, these simulators are pretty accurate, at least for something.
Well, flight simulator is a little different. I mean, like, flight simulators were specifically made to teach people to fly.
No, I mean,
I'm not saying that, like, these tractor games aren't, but...
I'm saying they trained literally in Microsoft Flight Simulator, the game. You know, I think it's just called Flight now. It's called Flight Simulator. In fact, I think it's been called Flight for, like, 15 years. The point being, make Roman Emperor Simulator. You call it that, you'll get all the simulator fans. They'll see this and be like, oh, what? What do I do? Do I simulate actually running the Senate? Do I simulate running Rome? Do I simulate running this? And then they'll be sold thinking, wow, this is going to be amazing. I'm going to get to see so much. And then it's actually just simulating just sitting in the chair watching.
No, I mean, see, and this is what I'm saying, right? You're trying to, like, you're describing it as something that it isn't. I mean, it would be very clear what the game was.
I'm saying if you were to try to lie about what it is, you'd get more sales.
That's not the point.
I mean, you're not trying to... Well, what's the point, then?
To make a thing.
I guess. I'm really disappointed. I dropped the cap to my water bottle, and I think it went under my seat. I'm clearly going to have to get it. But the big issue is when I reached under there, trying to get it, my hand grazed the switch that controls, like, the angle of my seat's at.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's one of the power ones, so there's no notches. So it's like, oh, no, I slightly adjusted my seat. And now I'm not quite sure I've got it right back to where I thought it was. I just hate that.
Yeah. Can you not play with strangers on this Yukita website?
I think you can play with strangers. I mean, I don't play with strangers. It's basically myself, Al, Alicia, Zach, to play a game of Russian Railroads. When we beat one game, we immediately start another game with both slightly different parameters. Like, oh, a different expansion this time, or oh, a different combination. Like, and, like, yeah, it takes, like, 2 months to do a full game. Maybe not. Yeah, actually, it does about 2 months. But just, you know, every 2 months, I'm just, like, slowly playing a game of Russian Railroads.
I actually do really like playing games over, like, email. I played a Game of Thrones game over email. That was really interesting.
Game of Thrones board game?
Yeah, the, like, second edition, the, like, stab everyone in the back.
The one that we played.
Yeah. And that was really fun because a big thing was, you know, of that game is, like, alliances. So you could email people and be like, hey, let's, you know, let's ally. And no one could see you talking to each other.
Yeah, I feel like the problem with that is, though, how do you deal with the card?
Oh, there was a seventh person who was, like, the neutral game. So, you know, he'd be like, ah, here are the cards. Well, also, we don't play with the cards because those are stupid.
What do you mean you don't play with the cards?
You're talking about the like, plus zero, plus one?
No, like not the plus zero, plus one. I mean the, like, the wildling deck or the, like, what cards you have in your hand.
Yeah, that's all tracked. Like, there's a whole big setup. It was all tracked for, like, a neutral player.
Ah, that makes sense. Yeah, so I feel like, one, the big problem was, obviously, that game just has so many rules that it turns out every time I played it, it was played wrong.
Like, Russian Railroad?
No, Game of Thrones. So, like, in Game of Thrones, right, if you use a raid action on someone that's using a consolidate power, they lose one power, and you gain one power.
Yeah, you steal from them.
Huge incentive to raid, and, like, much reduced incentive to consolidate power. That rule, like, excuse me, that's more of a problem of the Game of Thrones rules. The rules are all over the place. Like, if you want to read about what a raid does, it's on three separate pages in the rulebook. There's first introduction of it, then there's the general, and then there's the errata. Like, the way the rules are set up is very poor, so you're constantly, like, making mistakes, and then after you play the game, you're reading it, and you say, oh, gee, turns out the last time we played, we did this wrong. Oh, gee, the last time we played, turns out we did this wrong. Because, you know, it's like, oh, there's errata on a separate page. Like, and yes, I know that on the second page, there's a little asterisk that says, to see errata for raids, go to this page. Why not just have everything in one place?
Yeah.
It's a poorly constructed rule. But the point is, because we missed out on that one rule, there was a bunch of people consolidating power, there was not that much raiding, and that's the kind of game where once an army gets to be about 4 strength, it's basically invincible. Like, it would take such a tremendous amount of resources to kill a 4 strength army or rout them out, that you can't, but whenever I'm consolidating power, you quickly get a bunch of 2 armies, a bunch of 3 armies, like, your supply lines with banding. It became a turtle game where every game was going to turn 10, and then maybe a couple people would make a push on turn 10, but most of that time, turn 10 ended with a tie, and just went to tiebreaker rules. So, you play for, you know, 3 hours to get to a tie.
It's actually kind of interesting. All my games are always so bloody, I guess it,
Yeah, well, part of the two is the people I was playing with. Like, in general, the Merrimack meta is always turtle, 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 because the vast majority of games, playing super conservatively and defensively, is the best strategy. Especially, too, not only if it play conservatively and defensively, but if one person tries to keep their head up, crab mentality, all the defensive people team up to kill the person who's not playing defensively.
Well, yeah, obviously, right? You want the, you know, the blood in the water. Everyone go get it.
Well, no, it's not blood in the water. It's like, if they're playing Risk, everyone will kind of partition themselves off into their own continents, and then just sit there and then declare, okay, it's a tie. But the second one person starts fighting, oh, geez, guy's going to be fighting. Quick, everyone kill him. And then everyone just kind of serves me in from all sides, the facts back out to their content.
Yeah, that sounds like risk.
It's space risk. It's the Merrimack, like, turtle strat plus crab mentality. It's crabs in a bucket plus turtling. God, it's just like, it's such a toxic meta. It happens in every single game we play.
Why
does it happen? Because it's the optimal strategy.
Well, no, what you need to do is, so there's a thing that, I've only done it once or twice, and I really like it, where you make a deck of cards that are relationships, and you deal them out when the game starts. So, like, you deal a card, and only one person looks at it. Like, you deal it to everyone. No, I'm talking about, like, any board game.
Okay, so any board game, and so what is it? Like, for this game, is your take on Alheim, that sort of thing?
Sort of. You know, if you just let me finish my sentence. You deal the card and be like, oh, the person to your left betrayed you last game. Or the person across from you hasn't won a game in 2 years. It's just like very specific and straightforward, like, extra statuses. And
yeah.
I feel like it works really well. The few times I've done it, it's worked really well for people who kind of get stuck in these ruts of like, oh, clearly, you know, I'm always going to keep doing this, like, one same thing. So to, like, prevent
that.
Like
that wouldn't work with the Merrimack meta because, you know, this is a group of people that have lived together for years. They've been friends for years. Like, I lived with them at one point.
That's very specifically the group of people it would work with. Like, that's the group of people it's made for.
They're built-in biases and the last time we played an unrelated game, you won, so I'm going to stick to you this game to get back at you, like...
Wait, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, so...
They would ignore the card.
Never mind.
The first thing they would do is ignore the card and just stick to their regular biases.
So they're not good at playing games, is what you're saying?
No, they're very good at playing games.
No, you're... Never mind.
Oh, they're not good at, like, role-playing, is the point you're getting at.
No, they're not good at following rules.
I mean,
if someone hands you a card and says, here's the deal, this card is part of the game, it is a rule, and then you don't follow it, you're bad at following rules.
It's actually funny because they follow rules to a T. So, for instance, in Terraforming Mars, the rule for who goes first is whoever most recently won a game of Terraforming Mars goes first. However, if no one has played Terraforming Mars, what you do? Well, there's no rule for that. So we said, okay, well, we can roll for it or do something. But yes, but then we're injecting a house rule. And because we're injecting a house rule, we're not playing Terraforming Mars. We're playing Merrimack house rules of Terraforming Mars. Meaning whoever wins this game, there'll be a little asterisk next to it. This was not an official game we won. This was a Merrimack rules of Terraforming Mars game. Meaning the next time we play Terraforming Mars, we won't have someone who actually won Terraforming Mars. We'll just have someone who won Merrimack rules, meaning we'll be back at this and we need to roll for it again. And
what you're saying is literal insanity.
Yes. Well, it's literal to a T. So then we started thinking about it. It's like, well, if you extrapolate back, technically the first set of playtesters, no one had won, meaning they had to roll for it, meaning it was the playtesters' rules for Terraforming Mars. Meaning...
This might be the dumbest thing you've ever said to me.
Just a second. My radar detector is making a noise I've never heard, and it's showing a symbol I've never seen before.
I think aliens are about to get you.
Yeah, it says S. What does S mean?
Aliens?
Okay, it went back to normal. My God, that was... Like, what, did I just pick up a subspace transmission? Is the Enterprise trying to contact me?
Oh, man. You better hope so.
I sure hope so.
It's not a different kind of alien that is going to end poorly?
Yeah, exactly. Where are they going?
Right.
Yeah, it was super literalist to the point we must follow the rules. So eventually we came to this conclusion.
No one's ever won a game, ever?
Well, yes, but then here's how we solved this. We agreed to play Terraforming Mars. Immediately, we rolled to see who would be the designated winner. Immediately after this roll, the four other people decided to quit. meaning there was only one person left playing the game, and he won by default. Because he won before we even got to the determine, because determine who goes first isn't the first step in the rules. Put the board out is the first step in the, like, setup. We put the board out, step one. We all did this randomness. We decided, okay, you will win. The other four people quit the game because they quit. Only one person left. He wins by default. He is now officially won a game of Terraforming Mars. We then set up a new game of Terraforming Mars immediately, and because he had won, he would go first.
All right.
We found the like, hyper-literalist, rule-Nazi way to have an official game of Terraforming Mars. I guarantee you, the people playtesting this game didn't even do that. We are some of the few people to actually have played a game of Terraforming Mars correctly 100% by the rules. And I guarantee you we probably messed up one thing, some or two. You know, I don't think so. The rules are super good. They're like 3 pages of rules, super short, and everything about this game is all symbols. And like, yeah, if you don't know what the symbols are, you're kind of lost. There's like an index page in the back of the rules to explain all the symbols to the point where I think
Hold on one second.
What happened? Is it alien?
Okay.
What happened?
I had to kill a centipede.
Ah. Wow, yeah. That's terrifying.
Yep. Yeah, it is.
And it's funny, right? Like, centipedes didn't bug me as a kid, and now as an adult, I think they bug me even more than spiders.
Well, that's a terrifying thought, because spiders are fucking scary.
I know, but it's like, centipedes have even more legs.
Yeah, fuck spiders. That's all I have to say about the entirety of it.
Like, there's this giant one that lives in my basement. It's, honest to God, it's like an inch and a half. Flat.
Yeah, we can stop talking about this now.
It grows into a clack! It's smart.
Nope. We're not talking about this. I'm allowed my one irrational fear.
Well, so, you know why, like, arachnophobia is a thing, right?
Because I watched that movie when I was a kid, and my parents are not good parents.
No. It's so much worse than that.
No,
like,
you can stop talking now. I don't think you understand how... No, we're done with this conversation.